AM at the San Diego Convention. Let's do a Kirby panel. My apologies to anyone who got the room number off my website and went to the wrong room. They changed it, and I didn't see the email. So I went to the wrong room, if that makes me feel any better.
That explains a lot.
I think it goes, I don't have to say this every year, but I'll say it every year. We do these panels each year because we spend, at least I do, and probably everyone in this room does, we spend a lot of time talking about Jack. I get asked about Jack. We talk about Jack all the time, think about Jack. And it's nice to get all of us with a shared experience together for an hour and talk about Jack and to continue to, no pun intended, marvel at the continuing presence, influence, reprinting of Kirby. I feel like something's like a State of the State in the Kirby address every year. Every year I'm going to kick off a new list of things that are going on with Jack. On the way up here, I was walking over here with Paul Levitz, and I said to him, I'm going to the Kirby panel. He went, oh, novelty night. maybe I can announce. He said, we got the Sandman hardcover coming out. I said, I know, I wrote a foreword for it. He said, just tell him that the only decision we have to make at this point on the next one is Newsboy Legion in 3 volumes or 2. So that will be... People keep emailing me and asking me, is this going to be reprinted of Jack's? Is that going to be reprinted of Jack's? When are they going to reprint this? The answer is darn near everything. That everything that can be reprinted of Jack's is going to be reprinted of Jack's in the next few years. That's not an official announcement from anyone. It's just they keep coming to me and saying, you know, where do we find this? Or which issue should we include? Or will you write the foreword? Or whatever it is. And there may be a few selected things that because they were on a license book like 2001, or because they were for some obscure company in the 40s that nobody's ever heard of and such, but there's still, hold on a second, I'm sorry. No, that's not my urgent call, all right. They might not get reprinted, but everything else is going to be reprinted. DC is going to reprint everything that Jack ever did for them that they can possibly reprint. So I don't know if Justice Incorporated will be included, but everything else will be.
Can look forward to the Dingbats of Danger Street omnibus.
Well, if you call 3 issues an omnibus, yes. And you know, with Jack, 3 issues kind of was an omnibus. Anyway, the reason you don't get it as fast as you would like is that they perceive, they are aware that these are very expensive items, and they don't want to put out, you know, $300 of Kirby reprints next month. We'd buy them, but a lot of other people wouldn't. So they're spacing them out, and if it ever seems like it's a long time since the last Kirby reprint, that's not because they've lessened their commitment to Jack, it's just because someone there has assessed the market as not being ready for so much product at such a price point. Now let me go to my list here of things. If you were around Friday evening at the Eisner Awards, you saw the book I did called Kirby, King of Comics, win the Eisner Award for Best. And my acceptance speech was that I said, you know, people came up to me saying, wow, this book is full of fabulous artwork, Mark, and I go, yeah. Even I couldn't muck that up. You know? How difficult is it to fill a Jack Kirby book with fabulous artwork? Well, one of the ways it was easy is that Kirby fans are really good people. And they were, everybody was volunteering. I had so much stuff that people offered me. I've got the original art of this. I've got a stat of that. I had, you know, the hardest part of the book was, one of the hardest moments of that book was me deciding, I think Fing Fang Foom ain't getting in. I had a choice between the page with that monster crawling around the ledge and Fing Fang Foom, and I opted for the monster. Sorry. There's still one Kirby fan who is still very angry at me. The book will never be complete without Fing Fang Foom. But I wanted to thank everybody, some of whom are in this room, who contributed things or offered. A few names didn't get into the thank yous. And I wanted to thank the Kirby's, the state as always, for their continuing support. And there will be another Kirby book from the Abrams people shortly that you will find various things, which I am not at liberty to announce yet. But I'm not at liberty to announce yet, am I, Paul? No.
You could give a hint if you wanted.
I could give a hint?
You could give a hint.
Would it have anything to do with Jack's animation art?
Yes.
Okay, all right. All right. Let me introduce you a few people here before I go any further. The gentleman I just talked to is the lawyer who represents, I think I said this before, one of the continuing frustrations of working with Jack was that for a long time in his life, he did not maybe get the best legal advice or business advice. I think there were times when even the absolute most brilliant would not have helped him. But I sure wish he'd met Paul Levine many years ago. This is Mr. Paul Levine. That Lisa Kirby is not more than 7 feet from Paul Levine at any given point. This is Lisa Kirby sitting in the front row. For the dais this year, I asked a couple of people to be here. We have with us the reunion of the greatest rock band that never existed, the San Diego Five String Mob. You can applaud the San Diego Five String Mob. And it is appropriate to have them here this year because not only were they in a memorable four pages of Jimmy Olsen number 144.
Show the cover so they all know to go down and the dealers here can all hike up their price.
Yes. I think the only real issue Jimmy Olsen and Steve Sherman and I really wrote a plot for. And Jack followed none of our plot. We should not even have the San Diego Five String Mob in it, as I recall. These gentlemen, it's appropriate because this is the 40th San Diego Convention, and Jack loved the San Diego Convention, and these gentlemen, in addition to being part of this band, were also very instrumental in the founding of this convention, and we'll talk about that later, but first I'd like to introduce Mr. Mike Towery, Mr. Scott Shaw, Mr. Barry Alfonso, Mr. Roger Friedman, and Mr. William Lund. Sixth member, and of course with Jack, a five-string mob would not be complete without a sixth member, could not be here. John Pound, and he's with us in spirit, I suspect, and he will be here at the convention next year.
We'll drag John sends his best wishes.
And make him tell his part of the story there. Seated next to, let me see, you have all probably purchased a lovely book called The Best of Simon and Kirby. Hold it up, let's see. Yes, that one. What's the exact title? What's the exact title?
The Best of Simon and Kirby.
Right, I should know this.
One of the hardest things to choose in the history of man.
Okay. This is the gentleman who edited, packaged, sold, mounted, probably went down and ran the presses, Mr. Steve Saffel. If ever there was a room where I did not have to give an explanation of who he is, this is Mr. Mike Royer, ladies and gentlemen. I asked this gentleman to be on the panel. I have known Bill since 66. He was doing Lost in Space when I met him. And a lot of, quote, young actors never go beyond that. Well, that's their peak moment in their life. They never do anything else of note. They go to autograph shows for the rest of their lives and can say, hey, I was in a sitcom in 1953, whatever. But some of them go on to have fabulous careers. Bill is not only an accomplished actor, he is a writer, he is a musician with how many albums?
A lot.
Lots of them. This is Mr. Bill Mooney, ladies and gentlemen. Good friend of the Kirby family and had a nice relationship with Jack, which he will tell you about when we get to that step. Let me also introduce to you my former partner when I was working for Jack, Mr. Steve Sherman, who's sitting down here. unfortunately, I have to make a sad announcement. It's not an announcement, it's a recognition. When Steve and I were working for Jeff, it was like a trio. And several years here, you heard me introduce Steve and also introduce his brother, younger brother Gary, who was like the third musketeer in this, and Gary would go with us. Gary's the guy who arranged the famous Jack Kirby, Paul McCartney meeting. He's a close friend of the Kirby family. We lost Gary in January of this year. He died way too early. I mean, there's no good age to die, because some people are just way too early. And it was a very touching memorial service, full of Kirby's, the memorial service. Gary was buried by one of those weird coincidences, about 12 yards from my father, and the same memorial. And it was a very emotional moment. I was up there and feeling very bad about losing Gary, and I walked over, and there's an Evan here. I forgot where my father was. I thought he was farther down, because I could never find him in life. Anyway, Steve had a terrible year. A week or so ago, Steve lost his mother, who was a lovely woman and who has a Kirby connection. If you read Spirit World number one, there's a photo feature in the front of a woman who saw a UFO who's screaming. That's Steve Sherman's mother. Steve took the photo and dragged his mother. And how much did we pay her for that?
Nothing.
Right. She's a lovely woman, and she gave us two really good friends of the Kirby family, and just her too. Now, let me see if I can recover from that downer here and talk about a few other things. Let me also introduce the publisher of the magazine we all love, the Jack Kirby Collector, Mr. John Morrow. This is where I would ordinarily introduce Mike Thibodeau, but I don't see him here. Is Mike here? No? Okay. Mike loses his introduction for this year. Fine. Are there anybody else have a Kirby-related announcement they'd like to make before we get to Paul?
Yes, sir. Is Nick here? Dynamite Comics, or Dynamic Forces, will be publishing in the next few years all of the characters owned by the Kirby estate. That is to say, characters not owned either by Marvel or DC. Characters like Captain Victory and Silver Sun.
Very good.
I have someone here who definitely has a Kirby connection. When he was still in his mom's tummy, We told Jack and Roz that we were naming our son Kirby, and Jack pronounced that he will be a man of action. And true enough, here is my son Kirby, who is a man of action. Stand up.
Mark,
I have
a slight Kirby connection. In the front row over here is my son, Michael, his nephew, my grandson, Shanley. But people ask me about working with Jack, and I don't remember the nuts and bolts. What I remember is Jack and Roz and how you were made to be family, sitting having cake and milk in the kitchen, or going over a book with Jack and looking out the window, and there's my son and his sister swimming in Jack's pool.
Absolutely.
So he has a Kirby connection.
Curiosity for myself. How many people here swam in the Kirby's pool?
Right. You count.
You can.
What?
I cleaned it.
You cleaned it. Okay. After some of these people.
Poor man.
Oh, that's yes, rare.
Oh, it's got the Kirby posters down at the Tomorrow's booth. Join the Kirby Museum. Got some stickers and some mini comics.
Yes, if you are not visiting the Kirby Online Museum often and supporting it and going by the table and talking to Rand about it. Rand just gave me a copy of this. I don't know how many people have seen this. This is the Italian edition of Sky Masters, wow, of the Space Force.
Spanish.
What?
Spanish.
Spanish? Oh, okay. Well, I'll have Sergio read it to me. Wasn't there an Italian version coming too?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Anyway, let's look at that photo. Book on Jack, there's this full page picture, photo, it's about the fifth or sixth page in the book, and Jack's standing in his studio, you know, posing with a silver star drawing he did. And it's a very beautiful drawing. A man named Greg Preston did it, who's a photographer, goes around the country photographing cartoonists and artists in their studios. It's very, very fine work. When I was doing, assembling the book, and as I said, I had to leave certain things out. And one of the things I left out, I had this great photo of Jack with Sergio Aragonés. And at one point, Sergio saw the rough layouts of the book at my house and saw that the photo was in. And then later, I had to decide what to leave out as it happened. And I dropped the photo from the book. And I called Sergio. When I gave Sergio his copy, I said, I'm sorry, I ended up not using that photo. A day later, Sergio phones me and says, I see my photo is in the book. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I had to leave it out. He said, no, my photo is in the book. I went, no, I'm pretty sure I took it out. And he sounded so convinced. I went through, I page through the book, page by page. No, and I called Sergio back and I said, your photo is not in the book, Sergio. He says, yes, my photo is in the book. I will bet you $25,000 my photo is in the book. Which is something I say to Sergio. I always walk up and say, Sergio, $25,000 when I know I'm right about something. So I went, okay, your photo is in the book. Where is it? Jack is posing in that photo I just described, in his studio. On the wall behind him, there are framed photos, and one of the photos is a microscopic picture of
So he always manages to get into the margins somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway,
Hey, Mark. I just wanted one other slight Kirby connection that I thought might be kind of fun, because there's another guy who has a little bit of a Kirby connection that I was hanging out with a couple of weeks ago, and he actually sort of wanted to talk to you guys, so hang on just a second.
Everybody in San Diego, hello, greetings. This is Joe Simon.
Steve Saffel will tell us about what's coming up in Simon and Kirby library world.
Well, it's kind of interesting. A lot of people in the industry hate Joe passionately because at 96 years old, he has a 7-book deal. Occasionally, he talks about leaving me to do it on my own, and I say not even an option. But we are just, at this show, announcing that the next book is going to be the Simon and Kirby Superheroes. and we're going to do, the reason we delayed it until next summer is that we're going to do a 480-page book that is going to feature all of the non-Marvel and DC superheroes, starting with the, what is it, the Black Owl, and running through Stuntman, Captain 3D, Fighting American, the Vagabond Prince, the Fly, and Private Strong, all of it restored by Harry Mendrick, who is an amazing man, responsible for the reason that this book looks as beautiful as it does. So that will be the next book next summer. I'm helping Joe out with his definitive autobiography, and then we're going to be doing the romance, the horror, and the detective. Not necessarily in that order, we haven't figured it out yet. But we are going, Mark was saying that basically everything will eventually be in print. Well, our publisher, Nick Landau, is in the back here. He has championed these books from minute one. And if he has his way, everything that Joe and Jack did together will end up in print. And you guys will have it all.
Steve, give Nick a proper introduction.
Nick Landau, Titan Books. Nick and I went up to Joe's the other week, and Joe was just getting his day started, and we were just, you know, when you're visiting a friend of yours who's 96 years old, you're sort of thinking, I hope Joe's doing okay today. We walked in, and about 3 hours later, after continuously throwing stories back and forth, to the point that I pulled this thing out and just hit the button. It was just astonishing. The man, the only thing that happens is Joe will occasionally forget a name, and my wife Dana and I will then go home that day, and there will be a message on the machine with Joe going, I remember that name! I got it! It was... He is astonishing. I'd like to be that lucid yesterday. So, you know, I love Joe because he's just been so great. He does everything that he can to support the program. He signed 50 books so that we could just bring them out here to sell at the Titan booth. So we actually have Joe Simon signed copies of the Simon and Kirby, maybe one or two left. But he's incredible. And you can look forward to a lot of cool stuff coming up.
Bullseye?
We don't have Bullseye scheduled yet. We didn't put him in the superhero book because when we do the Western book, we need something to make that a thick book. Just like Blue Bolt will be in the science fiction. Believe me, choosing the best of Simon and Kirby, if you think it's tough rolling a rock uphill so it's going to roll down the other side, try choosing the best. We just did the best we could. But luckily we don't have to worry about it because we'll just print all the rest.
Steve and I spent a day or two up at Joe's place last year.
Yeah.
Just kind of looking through boxes of stuff he had in piles. And Joe really saved a lot of stuff. It's amazing how much he saved. If he doesn't have the original, he usually has a good photostat of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we spent a lot of time, you know, Joe was in the next room, and we kept running into him going, what is this?
You got to be really careful. You can't hold the artwork like this because you don't want to get drool on the artwork. So it's got to be like this. Oh, and I got to say, in the superheroes book, it looks like we're going to be able to run an entire unpublished Stuntman story, in part because of the generosity also of John Morrow, who is just supporting us. John and Rand are fabulous friends of this publishing program, and they are wonderful people and support everything they do. You should basically join the museum and buy the magazine as soon as we leave here. Can't thank them enough, and I will just say one other thing because it's absolutely true. Working with the designer and the head of production and all the people up at Titan was so much fun on this book. We took the book up to Joe. Dana and I actually got to hand him the first copy that we got in New York after it came back from Singapore, and Joe's looking through it and he's going, oh my God, the color is so beautiful. Oh my God, this looks so good. And then he points at it and looks at us and says, there's love in this book. And we looked at him and said, you better believe it. It's just amazing. It's wonderful to see a guy like Joe that happy.
And Joe is, Joe is just delightful. And you understand a little bit about what made Simon and Kirby work when you meet him, because he's so sharp, he gets it, he understands things very quickly. He's a little slow in speech now at his age, occasionally. And like Steve said, he'll
until he gets started, which kind of can't stop him.
It's right, yeah. Once he he's a little slow sometimes to grab the first part of something, and once he gets a hold of it, he's all there, and he understands it. He understands the new kind of publishing. He understands, you know, he's not sitting there saying, well, this is how we did it in 1943. He understands the marketplace today. He understands, he's wise enough to trust Steve, where I would trust Steve at a certain length. And, you know, and here's a guy who's been screwed over by a lot of publishers over the years. One of my favorite quotes from Joe to me, don't listen to this, Steve, is, we were talking about Al Hirschfeld, great caricaturist, who I sat for. Al Hirschfeld drew me. I put Nina's in my hair when I had hair. And he said, and Al Hirschfeld was like 92 years old when I met him, lived to be 99. And Joe said to me, now Al Hirschfeld, there's a guy I always admired. And I said, because he was such a great artist? And Joe said, no, because he was 96 years old, he sued his agent. I assure you, he will never have cause to sue Steve Sapp.
I will say this. You heard Joe's sense of humor when he threatened to sing. You heard that. I once was talking to his daughter, Lori, who said, people think that he says these weird things because he's so old. Trust me, he's always been like that. He's just phenomenal. But it's also so wild. We went up recently and got a chance to visit with Al Roker. And Al has animation art and original cartoon art all over the walls. And we're walking out. And Al's like, I got another meeting. No, he had to take his daughter somewhere. And we stop. And I say, Joe, friend of yours here. And we look on the wall. And there was this picture that had been given to Al by these two women. Their father had given it to them to give to him. It was an original Jack Davis. Mm-hmm. And how many people can go walking through Al Roker's office building going, oh, yeah, I love Jack. We work together a lot. And it's like, you know, Al Roker is like standing there going, you know, because he's meeting Joe Simon. And it was just very cool. I mean, Joe is fabulous.
He absolutely is. Anybody else got a Kirby-related announcement before I plunge more into our path? Mike, what are you up to these days? Tell us what you are, Mr. Royer, what are you doing?
Well, interesting. In a way, I'm lucky because I still get to ink Jack. Because there are some fans who are fond of what I do with Jack, and what Jack allowed me to do. And of course I owe it all to Mark and Alex Hope that I even got a call from Jack. But there are fans who will commission me to slavishly reproduce something that was done 35 years ago. And the most fun is when it's someone like Tom Kraft and his What If Kirby webpage, that he will commission me to ink something that I never inked before. And he'll find something from Fantastic Four or Thor or some early book before my tenure with Jack. And that's really fun, to put myself in the mindset of what I might have done 35 years ago and hopefully make it work. So I'm lucky, I still get to ink Jack Kirby.
That's me. Mike, shove the mic over near Bill. And let me tell all the panelists, by the way, these microphones this year for some reason really stink. And you need to talk very closely into them and talk into them and not to the person next to you and not play with the bass. Bill, tell us a little bit about, tell us how you met Jack. First of all, tell us how you discovered Kirby work in your life.
I started passionately reading comic books when I was about 4 or 5, which would have been end of the 50s. And so the first stuff I was probably exposed to was maybe Gil Kane, Carmine Infantino. But as soon as the Marvel books started coming out, there was just lightning bolt, you know, from Jack's work. And he was so prolific, which I don't need to remind anyone here about, that you kept getting it weekly, and it was just so exciting for me. And I was a huge fan. And when I was on Lost in Space, I used to write and draw my own comic books, Captain Panther and the Fox. And I used to just cop, you know, Jack's pages every day. It was one way to get through the workday when I wasn't on camera. But I didn't really meet Jack until the mid-80s. I started writing for Marvel in 85, and Julie Schwartz, God rest Julie Schwartz, so I love Julie. Julie introduced me and my wife Eileen to Jack and Roz, and we became friends with him. And the coolest thing I think I've ever done I must say, I've had the opportunity to meet and work with a lot of so-called big famous celebrities in my life, and that's great, but what impressed me the most was meeting Jack, meeting Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, those guys. I mean, those were my idols. So, having been introduced to everybody from June Schwartz, my wife Eileen and I said, well, why don't we invite these guys over? And we invited Jack and Robbins, Jerry and Joanne Siegel, and Bob and Elizabeth came over for a dinner. And it turns out they all just went, oh, sure, we'd love to, right? And they came over. They hadn't been in the same room together for like 25 years. They never really just socialized as that group of people. I have a comic display cabinet that holds 4 shelves of 11 books. It's like 44 books. So there was one shelf of all of Jack's covers, and there was a shelf of Bob's covers, and there was a shelf of Superman and some Bernard Bailey stuff, right, for Jerry. And then the top shelf is all the number ones of the Marvel books that Jack had done in the Marvel Age. And to see these guys look at these books, it was so interesting because they were so completely different. And Jack was such a mensch, such a gentleman. I mean, the first thing he did, he looked at this display and he just said, ah, you know, look at Joe's work. Look at Joe's work. If it hadn't been for you and Joe, Jerry, none of us would have had jobs. None of us would have been here. Isn't it beautiful to see Joe's work? And Jerry was just touched to see all of it because he hadn't seen those books, and he was such a gentle soul. And he was just admiring everything, just kind of being very humble. And then Bob was like, look at my books! I did that! Yeah.
Bob said, I did that cover by Jerry Robinson. I did that.
He was a very Dr. Smith of comic books. But our children, Seth and Liliana, jumped in the pool up at Jack and Ross as many times, and Jack would sit and be so patient. He was just a hero of mine. I think Jimmy Stewart and Jack Kirby were the two greatest men I knew outside of my father. You know, really just completely different kind of people, but just so straight ahead and so strong and so inspiring and so positive, and just, you know, hero worship here.
Bill, by the way, worked with Jimmy Stewart in a movie called Dear Bridget.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. Happen. And I will say the first song, The Seduction of the Innocent, ever did, it was an original song. It was a song I wrote for Jack called King Jack, and we played that here many times. And one of my fondest memories of the San Diego Convention, for me, was the band, which was, if you're familiar with Seduction of the Innocent, it's a pretty loud, sloppy rock and roll band. But for Jack and Roz's anniversary, we did our best to work out a version of Gershwin's Our Love Is Here to Stay. And we opened a set here at the convention with that, and Jack and Roz danced alone. And it was an honor to be a part of that.
Can I show this picture?
Yep, Lisa's got a photo.
This is of that. It was just presented to me, right? First, I don't know. Chris over here presented this beautiful picture of my friend.
When the Jack Kirby Collector prints a transcript of this, I assume that photo will be in there. Give it a full page, John. And there will also be a wonderful photo, I'm sure will be reproduced, that was taken at Bill's house the evening of that dinner. With them all sitting together, you just look at that photo and you go, wow.
That was really, honestly, that was a highlight.
It's a photo of the history of comics, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a great night.
It's funny, I knew Bill, like I said, when he was doing Lost in Space, and he'd come around our comic club guys and stuff like that. And we, of course, hated him because he was famous. He was not mowing lawns to earn money to buy comics and things like that. And, you know, you just, you don't want somebody roughly your age bracket to be doing that well.
you didn't clean Jack's pool?
I did not clean, but I did
even after your kids were.
Well.
And then I didn't see him for many years. The next time I saw him, this is one of those bizarre ways the fate works. We were on the set of a live action Archie Comics pilot we worked on. He was one of the cast members of it. He was playing a rock musician. What a stretch. And I just thought, my God, we've come, it was about 8 years later, something like that. We're doing a TV show about comic books together. So, Bill, what's your favorite enduring Jack Kirby work? What's the one thing you would take to a desert island?
Favorite Jack work? It's awfully hard to beat the first 50 Fantastic Fours. It's really hard to beat that. That would probably, there's so many characters in there, and they're all developed so beautifully, and they all look so great, and they're so fluid, and so alive. And so I think I'd go there. But I'm a big fan of Hank Pym as well. You know, those early Ant-Man's are great. They're all great. You know, I mean, I could see those covers. And with all respect to everybody else, if I got a Jack cover and I opened up and it was somebody else doing the interior pencils, I was always disappointed. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to any of the great talents that did those books, but if Jack was on the cover and I didn't get Jack inside, it was like, oh, okay, well, what's happening? But I'm going to go with the first 10 at that.
I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about Jack's influence on your writing, but I want to mention that some of the work that Bill has done as a writer has been in conjunction with a very fine writer who has snuck in. Peter David is sitting over there. Peter David, the star of yesterday's Quick Draw.
Well, you know, honestly, Jack is like the Beatles or Bob Dylan. So you can... You take in a little tiny bit, maybe, of their greatness, and you're just inspired by it. But they're the sun in that solar system. You're just a little satellite floating around it. I don't think I could ever consciously say I'm going to do something of that level. I think you can't help but absorb some of it because it's so great. But in terms of the actual influence, I would never think to approach that level.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because in his intro to the book, Joe mentioned that he and Jack were the, like the Beatles before the Beatles were even the Beatles. And I was doing an interview recently with Wired, and they asked, why did he say that? And I said, well, my guess is that the Beatles didn't create rock and roll. But after the Beatles, rock and roll was never again the same. It had evolved to something greater, and they sold millions of records. And if you look at it, Joe and Jack didn't invent comics. But after Simon and Kirby, comics changed fundamentally. Joe talks about the time that they went up with Martin Goodman to talk to the guys at Archie, because the guys at Archie didn't like the shape of Captain America's shield because it looked like the shield, and they basically said, don't do that. And they agreed, and Joe thought, well, cool, the disc can be thrown like a frisbee anyway, it's cool. Although before frisbees. But the thing is, after Simon and Kirby, everything changed. And if you look at it, their first million seller is a superhero book. Their second million seller is Boy Commandos. It's a war book. Their third million seller is when they create the romance comic. After them, everything changed. And that's why I think the Beatles thing totally works, because they changed the nature of comics. And the two of them together far exceeded the sum of the parts.
Steve, I'll give you one other aspect that you, I agree with everything you're saying. But I think also the thing that Joe probably meant was Joe and Jeff were both very conscious their whole lives of the need of someone to make a living, of an industry. And so they both grew up, they were in environments where you had to go out and earn a living for your family. After the Beatles, there were 75 million rock groups. And a lot of people looked at the Beatles and said, that's what I want to do to make a living. They invented an industry for people. And Joe and Jack in the same way. And that's one of the reasons Jack, we quoted earlier, respected Joe Shuster so much. Joe, Jerry and Joe invented an industry for others. And Joe and Jack were both very proud of all the people that got work, not necessarily in Simon and Kirby studio, but because Simon and Kirby had helped the industry out and had broadened the industry and created work for all these people. Two men who both had enormous respect for any other comic book artist or writer, even someone who they maybe personally didn't like or didn't care for. They didn't make a lot of value judgments about people's work necessarily. It's like, that's a guy who's out trying to feed his family. I respect that.
Absolutely. And, he was so generous. The Comet Man, which was our first project for Marvel, came out relatively close to the time we had this dinner, and we were very excited to show him our work. And Jack took so much time to really give us positive feedback about it. And he sat and spoke to us that evening, that dinner at our house. He sat and spoke to us about things beyond this world that you knew he believed in. I mean, really deep kind of metaphysical things about demons and other dimensions. It was fascinating to hear him relax and speak like that. Jack and Ross brought us a bottle of brandy that night as a gift. And Eileen and I, we still have that. We'll take a little sip every year in honor of them. And a really funny thing, this was before everybody had a GPS system. And they lived about 35 miles away from where we lived. And we're up in the canyon. It's not the easiest place to find. And Jerry and Joanne Siegel admitted early in the evening that they had driven to our house the night before, the day before, to find it. Right, so they knew where they were going and get there in time. And Jack and Ross said, yeah, we did that too.
Thank you, Bill, for sharing all of that with us. Very much. Well, we talked about Seduction of the Innocent. We made the leap to the Beatles. I want to make the next obvious leap to the San Diego Five-String Mob. I'm going to tell a brief story. Did Steve leave? Serpent leave? Anyway, okay, I was going to have Steve help me tell the story. When Steve and I were working for Jack, we used to go out usually on Saturdays to work with him. One day, Roz called and said, instead of Saturday, could you come Sunday? Sheldorf is coming by with some people from the San Diego convention. And this was very, what year was this now, guys, this visit?
69
is
the first visit.
First visit, okay, so what, yeah.
70 and 71.
What was the visit where you guys got into the comics?
69 was when they were in Irvine.
Right. Yes, yeah,
and the first one I went
thousand to
thousand
up. Up that hill, but I swear I thought my car was going to flip over backward.
That's okay. So, had there been a San Diego convention at this point?
No. Yeah,
no, there was no San Diego convention. It was just an idea that was being talked about. So, Saturday morning, I planned to do other things that day. We were going to go out on Sunday instead. Roz calls me at 11 a.m., I guess, and says, Mark, can you and Steve get out here?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, was there something wrong? She says, yeah, Sheldorf is here. He said he was going to bring some people from San Diego. I said, well, what's wrong? She said, I think he brought San Diego. So I called Steve, and we cleared our days. We drove out there, to thousands. We got there, and there were, like, cars parked all outside the Kirby. It was like a parking lot outside. We ran in, and how many people were in that group that he brought?
Probably a dozen kids. And your mom, I'd say it was about a dozen kids, wouldn't you guys?
It's hard for me to remember because there were a number of trips, but
right.
Often the groups, it could be, would you say like 12 to 18 at a minimum, something yeah. Like that.
So there's about 9 cars outside, by the time you get through all the parents and people come.
Yeah.
Someone pick up the story.
Speaking of the cars, when we left, Jack came out to my car, and he looked, and I had this little metal, like, toy license plate that I glued to my glove box, and he goes, and it was of the thing, it's like a swipe of the thing, he goes, hey, that's good, my Donna's got that in her car, too, which I was like, hey, cool.
Okay, tell me, pick up the story of that day.
Well, I've recently, through the auspices of Mike Towery, gotten to hear recordings that we made at Jack's house in 1970 and 71. And separating the visits, one from the other, they kind of blur together. But I think what was consistent is they were kind of almost like guru sessions, in the sense that we would sit around Jack, we would ask him questions. Some of them would be about comics he had done, some would be about comics he was going to do. But the tone of them was amazingly philosophical. he would talk about the really deep background behind these books. And what was interesting is that you could hear that his view of the world was colored by a lot of reading. It would seem like he had done reading in philosophy and religion, but also in growing up in the streets, back in New York. There was sort of an old-fashioned sort of street kid gangster mentality creeping behind this sort of cosmic view he had of things. And he would go off on these long discussions, and he was very willing to do a give and take even on that level with the kids. And he made no distinction between older people and younger people. I could pipe up with something and it would be just like, Pyrrhus was talking. So it's that tone of the interviews that stand out the most for me.
Let me ask, give Mike, I'm going to go over to each of you and ask, tell me how old you were when you visited Jack, what you wanted to be when you grew up, and then tell me what you're doing now. Okay, Mike Calvary?
Well, I was 14 when I first visited Jack.
Talk to the mic.
Our little group, when we first visited Jack, it was in 1969, and I was 14, and Shel Dorf had moved out here from Detroit, where he worked on the Triple Fanfare, and he got through Barry, he got a hold of Richard and me and Bob Sork and a couple other kids, and when we all got together, he was talking about the convention and maybe we could do something like that in San Diego, and it sounded good. We didn't know if he was for real or not, but then one day he said, "Hey, would you guys like to talk to Jack Kirby?" And it was like, "Would you guys like to talk to God?" It didn't seem like it was something that you could really do, and so it was like, sure. And so he actually was able to call Jack up on the phone, and tongue-tied, we each got on and stumbled through some kind of question with Jack. And then after that, he said, "Well, would you like to go visit him?" And I was like, "Well, sure." So Shell rented a station wagon, we all piled in, and we went up there. And I remember the first time Jack loved Barry, and I think Barry's first question to Jack, or one of the first ones, won him over. He said, "Well, should we call you King or Mr. Kirby?"
No. But I will insert this, is that I have the temerity to say, Jack, I don't like the way when you draw Iron Man, you can see his eyes. It's better when you just have like little black slits. And I actually made him explain why he did this. So imagine the atmosphere of trust this man established, that I could say that to him, and that was like perfectly cool. Amazing.
Mike was one of the founders of this convention. All these gentlemen were responsible that this convention existed all, but Mike, the first couple of years, did an awful lot of the hard lifting, heavy lifting, grunt work. I can't begin to tell you how important this man was to the founding of this convention. Quickly here, because I got to stop on time. Mike, when you went to see Jack that day, were you just as a fan? Did you, were you thinking of getting into business? Were you, what was your interest in comics at that point?
I was just, well, I was before we even met Shell, Richard, Alf, and I, and Bob Sork, we were all friends in the same area, and we were all comic dealers, so we had kind of a commercial interest in it. And that was, I was a comic fan. And I probably would have been a better dealer if I hadn't been such a fan, but I like to read them and keep them myself. So. I didn't have thoughts about being a professional in that respect. Later on, I became I'm a software programmer now.
Okay, great. Scott, what age were you when you went there that day?
I wasn't there on the first day in the first visit when they lived in Irvine. I was up for all the subsequent visits in Thousand Oaks, and I was 17 at the time.
And you had already wanted to be a cartoonist?
I went, like most cartoonists, I think I was born with what I call the cartoonist gene, and I had just started doing underground comics at that time.
And that was the day that I met Scott for the first time.
That's right, and Mark and I immediately bonded, because when I found out that he worked for Western Publishing, I immediately was asking, "Well, who's the guy that draws, when he draws Mickey Mouse, he does feathering on the nose instead of a highlight?" And you go, "Well, that's Jack Bradbury." And I say, "Who's the guy that kind of draws them? They aren't quite looking like the characters, but they look real zippy." And he goes, "That's Jack Manning." And it was like suddenly Mark was able to connect all these styles as a cartoonist, and Western stuff was always anonymous, that Mark was like my conduit to finding out who all these guys were that I had no idea. And we worked together many, many times and are very good friends.
Scott is telling you that even at that age, I was doing panels. let me jump down here. Jack took kind of interest in Barry because Barry was kind of a sickly looking kid then. He was a skinny little guy.
I've been eating since.
And, but Jack worried that Barry was going to fall over, I think, at that point or something. And he just had this paternal feeling of it, which is why Barry wound up as in the role he did in the San Diego Five String Mob as the mascot, kind of. And then he later came back and inspired a character. Clarion, the witch boy in Demon, was kind of based, the visual was kind of based, not exactly, but you could see a lineage there of what Jack
had. And he was the only one of the five string mob that had a name. He was Barry Boy.
That's right. Yeah. Roger, what age were you when you went up there that day?
I was 16. At the time, I was a college undergraduate, wanted to do science, but I think Jack, among others, who, by the way, drew the very few superhero comic I can remember reading as a child, Private Strong. I always remember that. But it never really occurred to me up to that point that I could do something in the comic book industry. And in fact, as it turned out over the next few years, I had a chance to do a small part through my good friend Scott Shaw and my other good friend Mark Evanier as a letterer. And one of the high points, really, of my career, something I'll never forget having the opportunity to do. But I think Jack helped in so many ways for so many of us. And because of Jack's cosmic perspective, I think I stuck with it, which is why I now teach astronomy and physics at University of California, Santa Barbara, and trying to actually to convey to my students a sense of the cosmic in a rather different way than Jack did, and probably a less successful way. But
what are the physics of the negative zone?
That's a panel for next year that Mark is already setting up.
Give Bill, I got to rush here. Give Bill the microphone. Bill, how old were you that day?
I was 20. I was in the Navy. That's how I ended up in San Diego. I just got back from Vietnam, and I was there on shore for support activities. So. And the other part of your question was, what did I want to do? When I was growing up, I always wanted to do just about everything. You know, I wanted to draw, I wanted to write, I wanted to be an actor. Today, I'm not doing the drawing so much, although I did a little bit during my fanzine days. Today, I am acting on stage, a little bit of film and TV work, and sometimes I do write. I've written articles. My most favorite one was interviewing Bill King. So.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Mm-hmm. Scott, would you, we only have a few minutes left, you tell the story of how the San Diego Five String Mob came to be.
Well, this was a very exciting time because, first of all, Jack was starting what would become to be known as the Fourth World Books. And just the fact that Jack had gone from DC, or from Marvel to DC, was absolutely mind-blowing to us. It was like, that was all we'd ever known, because those of us that had scoured out older comics. And so we were fascinated by all this stuff, so we were wrapped to everything. And at one point, Jack said, and he wasn't speaking literally, in fact, in an interview that you have, he specifically said that he didn't base his characters on his friends or other people he knew. But he told us, he said, you know, we were like, where do you get your ideas or something like that? And I remember he said, I can turn anybody into a character, even you guys. and you know, I was 17 years old. I mean, I'm not real bright now, and I sure wasn't real bright then, but I remember the look on his face, and it was a very subtle one, but it was essentially, holy shit, what have I done? Because we went, well, do it, Jack. And he went, okay. And so after that, you know, he said he was going to put us in Jimmy Olsen. And I remember every issue, I'd come, of course, I was buying them anyway, like religiously, but it was like you'd flip it open. No, we're not in here. Well, maybe we're this background guy here. No, we're not there, you know. Next issue, no. And finally, when that thing came out in this issue of I love this cover too, because it's you know, typical Wild Anything Goes, but I love the above it just says Far Out. And I'm sure that was Jack's logo, Jack's blurb, right? It was Far Out.
I don't remember, but
it didn't say Don't Ask, Just Buy It. But anyway, this issue finally came out, and he really caught us all. I don't remember. I guess Shell must have sent him some photos of us.
We took our own pictures.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and we sent them up.
There was one day there was like a photo session where we all got our pictures taken.
Yeah. And
go ahead, jump in.
I'm sorry. Originally he wanted to put us in Forever People, is what he was telling us there when he was devising this whole concept of what the San Diego Five String Mob were. He came up with a name right then and there. And he said he was going to put us in Forever People. So we all went back, we had our photos taken, we sent them up there. And I still have my hair always falling down in front of my face. So if you look on the first page where we're all featured, there's that hair falling down in front of my face.
They were pretty good likenesses, yeah. I thought.
I thought
except
they were
for mine. I mean, you would never know that was me. I looked like Rob Reiner on All in the Family in those days. Only now am I really a meathead, but you know, I had the long hair and the drippy mustache and you know, the standard issue hippie look. So I'm the guy in the background playing what I always call the cosmic oboe. I don't know what it is that I'm playing, but I'm definitely playing something.
Anyway, I think it's wonderful that finally, after all these Kirby panels, we finally brought you actual Jack Kirby characters on your panel. Minutes next year. We are out of time. Thank you very much, and please exit as quickly as you can because we're running late. Thank you.